So, now something completely different. We are moving from this the basic semantics of our underlying machines over to high-level languages and the features that are offered there in order to make your code more modular and encapsulate your code better in some ways. So, the first thing that I want to talk about is how to dispatch method calls. So that is something which is pretty basic, or at least it might look like that. However, I don't know how your introduction to programming languages has gone in terms of how the internals of dispatching actually work and what the recent developments in this area are. So let's have a look. Dispatching, what are we doing? Well, that's, we will have a look at what the general idea of that is and how we can model that in a formal way. Then let's have a, then we will see in the we will have seen in the motivation what a typical problem with dispatching actually is. So let's have a look at how to deal with that in single dispatching and then go over to multi-dispatching and have a look at what that actually means in terms of semantics, then extend our high-level language with these features and then compare it with how a language fares that has more support for multi-dispatching already built in. So, back to high levels. We are now in the world of objects and classes and object-oriented languages like these C# or Java or C++ and all these. And especially at the time when Java emerged from the depths of C, there was only classes and objects, and people wanted to realize everything just with plain single inheritance and classes and all that. In order to still be able to share code, there was this idea of dispatching your method calls to the specialized versions of your basic method. And yeah, the typical example for something like that is the one that you see in this case. We have, for example, object, which has something like equals, and we have then created our own class that inherits from object. It also supports our special implementation of equals. And then we have a user of the whole thing, which is the hash set here, which offers a method to add some object to your hash set. And yeah, also there's support for having special types of members in the hash set only. So, what does that give in terms of code? So, we have a look at natural. The way that natural is implemented is the way you see here. So, the natural is a very meaningful constructor which just takes a parameter and fills the class with the absolute value of the parameter. And then there's the nice equals method over here, which we would like to use in the way that is here. So we want to compare it with another natural, and in case that we have the same number, we want to return true, and in every other case, we want to return false. So let's have a look at what actually and how we would use that in practice. So we would, for example, use the hash set in order to keep lot of these natural numbers in a set, like that. And for example, let's try it out. Let's add two naturals in there and make sure that what comes out of that will actually be the set with just one natural number. And turns out that if you let it run like that, you'll end up with a result that gives you 2 times your natural. Well, now you might ask or expect, especially as a beginner, why is that so? Is hashSet in some way buggy or not? Well, what would you say? What did I do wrong? It will get pointers, definitely. Yeah, so these two pointers over there. But is that internally what it does is it actually at some point calls, well, not like this. In some point it will go there and will call on one of the objects equals and then this one, but yeah,
it will call equals or hash or get hash calls, something like this.
Yeah, it will probably at some point also call the hash code, of course, but let's keep it focused on that part, right? Because that is also in some way important here. Yes. So now we are nearing the point that I also wanted to say. So the thing is, here, with the equals that is called inside the hash set and the equals that we have in the natural class, especially as a beginner, we would assume that they would in some way relate to each other. Because, well, you want... Well, you don't, but you're probably not the beginner. Well, in any way, equals in some way is meant to take... As a partner, some other object, and you wanted to compare to another of these naturals, and you would probably try to overload your predecessor's equals with your own equals, and as you want to only compare to your to objects of the same identity of the same type as you are yourself, you probably try to override it with something like this. However, that's not how the whole system works. So how is dispatching actually working in there? First of all, it's quite tedious to have these the method call form as we had it so far with this stressed first parameter of the method. So we had some kind of method which has parameters and all that, and in languages like Java, you have the first parameter of the whole thing mentioned here in a very exposed way. You always keep it with a dot in front. However, what that actually does is just it kind of on the machine level, if you execute it afterwards, there's actually no difference between this first parameter and all the other parameters over there in some way. So all of those are kind of meant as being parameters that are handed over to the method. However, these languages want to stress that they have this single dispatching, single inheritance, and all that. So what they do is they especially treat this first parameter by removing it from the parameter list and moving it to this exposed situation in this expression with a dot. However, it's just one, conceptually, it's just another parameter for your method. So you will see me using the kind of more general way of calling methods quite often in the following, because, well, at some point we will leave the way that Java thinks of methods and think about something more advanced, and for that we need to get rid of this special treatment of the first parameter. And yeah, at some point it won't matter anymore whether we talk about the first parameter or the following. So we will see me using the second version of this thing, which is actually not valid Java code, but who cares? So that's actually the way of calling at some point. So, for example, at that place here, where I want to explain you how dynamic method call is actually happening. So, what you have for dynamic dispatching is that you have code that has an expression that's treated as a method call, and for that expression you have a few parameters. Notice that I didn't put the exposed first one in there, but instead we have all the parameters in normalized form, just as a parameter list, and they have certain types associated. So that is something, if the compiler detects that, it would try to determine what the actual static types for these for the parameters are, in fact. So these are the types that a compiler can assume that that will be the types for these variables in all possible executions of this. So this means that this might not be the concrete types, but these are the ones with which the respective variables that are in there are defined at some place or declared at some place. And all these make up the signature of the method call. Then, in order to find out what code actually has to be executed whenever we find such an expression, what we have is we want to find a definition of a method which has the exactly same name as the one that we have found in our code. And it, what we want to have is that the types of the parameters of the candidate that we might consider for being called, these types have to be in some way compatible with the signature that we have found at the call, which means that they don't have to necessarily be exactly the same, but they need to be compatible in some way. And for method calls to be compatible, we have the idea of we might call a method with parameters that are in some way more special than the types with which we have provided our method at the first place, but we can be sure that they will never be more general than the types that we have in our method candidate to call. Well, once again, I said special and wanted to say specific, so that's a common error for me, so please excuse me for that. So I wanted to say specific, not special, so that's the appropriate term here. Okay, anyway, in systems that are standard for object orientation in broad masses, like C++ or C# or Java or all of them. What we also have involved in the process is a so-called specializer. The specializer is the cause why this extraction of the first parameter to the front is actually happening. This extraction process wants to stress that the first parameter has a somewhat special role. And what is the special role of the first parameter in this case? Well, the code that is actually called when we have determined the signature of our method and we have found the method which is actually compatible to that signature is not yet done. Well, there's still another indirection that might happen, especially to do with this first parameter. And it is the following. Although for this method call, the first parameter has a certain fixed static type with which it had been declared somewhere in there, we still branch not to the implementation of the method with exactly the static type that we have it defined with, but instead with a more specific one, which comes from the specializer of the first parameter. What does that mean in practice? Well, okay, so there's the words for that, the concrete method and the specializer, okay. So in Java, we can kind of try to look at the problem that we had before once again. So if we have our object O1 and object O2, we by just writing object on there, we will determine the static type of these two variables O1 and O2. However, we will assign objects of a more specific type to these two objects, which are of runtime type natural here. However, the compiler now assumes for these variables O1 and O2 that the static type of both of them is object now. So now when I call my equals method here with my with O1 O2, what I will get for signature for my function is the type that equals of object and object. So then there's several concrete methods or candidates for calling within natural. We will have had this one comes as an inherited method from object, and the other one which we have specified anew is the equals natural N1, natural N2. And now if if the system tries to associate the candidates with the so-called generic function here, then the system will try to at first emanate from this version that has object and object for the first types, which is this one. And the other one that it will consider is the one that we got from specializing the first constructor, which would be the one over here, which would have a natural as the type of its first parameter and object as the type of its second parameter. So if we translate that back, how would we be able to obtain this version of equals method? Well, that would be, as you have said, that would be by implementing an equals method with object as a parameter. And we would have to do that inside of the class. No, not like this. Inside the class natural. So don't be confused with this normalized way of writing. That's just kind of the way that I represent the type here. If you want to specify this one, we would have to define an equals method with just an object as parameter inside the natural class. That's the way that the Java system wants us to specify these methods over there. So that would be a valid thing, because in Java, what we allow is that there's specialization on the first argument. Static methods are ones that are not dynamically dispatched, so there's no specialization at all in these. So, does that really affect us in so many situations? Let's do a short mini quiz and check how this dispatching and overloading actually works. So, I've put on a few methods or method declarations here. There's one that shouldn't bother you too much. That's just for calling system.out.println in a more convenient way with just P as abbreviation. And yeah, that's almost it. So let's have a look at how Java dispatches methods. So the first thing would be to create a variable b from a new b. And we create a and assign it from a. Then we would call a's m1 with b as parameter. So, what's on the output? Like this? Is there anything in there? Like this?
Yes, because it's a static string there.
Anyone? All fine with that? So, M1A in A. So why is that? Sorry?
You call it on object A and its static type is big A, so it is calling A and not B.
Okay, so you say I have A here, and you need to care about the static type of that. How do I get the static type of that? Well, on the declaration part, yes. Okay, so from declaration you get the static type, so that's large A. Now, what do I have to do next? In order to, well, I have now gotten this part, I think. So it's not M2 because, well, yeah, so it's probably M1A, so that's fine. Okay, next one. I've now changed one piece, which is just this one over here, and reverted the or exchanged the two parameters. M1, B and B. Is that true? So let's have a look. Yes, true. So everything is B here, both of the parameter and both parameters, and we have M1 called. So M1's for sure. Then in B, there's just, there's this M1, it takes a B, so we'll just put out B and B. So, fine so far. Next one. Let's get away from the parameters and have a look at what's happening here. M1 and? B and B? This one?
One under it.
This one? No, but that's not finished yet. That's not the output so far.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you have reached that. So you say yes. Why not this one? So, overwriting or something? Not here. Okay. Next one, M2. Well, that's just quite similar to the one that we had before. So, still finding this, but this in this case, M2. Yeah. So, this one was not a valid candidate? We have? Mm-hmm. So we go here, but here we call M2. And we have A over here, and we have this one over here. Shouldn't that be overloaded?
It's the same like before. You are still in superclass A and M2 in this class.
So when's overloading actually happening? So I would have to call B. So, actually, the reason why this is not calling the other one is this one here. If I would have put public in there, it would have gone to this one. But that's your usual overwriting. That's just inheritance and polymorphism. That should be something that should have been common. So that's just, I should probably switch over to having that public in the default template over here, because I seem to run into that question all the time. So, actually, that would be the polymorphic overwritten method here, if I would have public in both spots. That would be the standard behavior that you would like to have in these things. That would be also be the behavior that you would have in the equals case, for example. If you have equals of object called on a statically typed caller of object, but has a dynamic type of natural, you would still expect to the overwritten method to be called.
And I'm not sure about the example in B.M1. What made it not overload then?
That's a good question, and that's what actually what I wanted to discuss with this example here. So no wonder that you accepted the third line so easily. Yeah. I wanted to give you the bait that M1 would be overwritten by the second M1 in B. However, the thing is that here we have used different static types. As soon as we start doing that, we don't overwrite anymore. The other one was successfully overwritten because it has the same type over here. So the thing is that you can still call on an object that has the static supertype, which would be A, for example. And if you call an overwritten method, you wouldn't end up with the execution of the method in the base class, which would be this one, but instead you would end up with the second implementation, which is the overwritten version here. So that is the basics of polymorphism. That is how it is supposed to work. It just didn't work because I was silly and put the private static in front of that. But anyway, yeah, that is how the default thing would be supposed to work.
The actual thing that causes the fork example not to overload, is it the private or the static or the
visible? It's the private static here. I wanted to be mean, but...
is it one?
Sorry?
If you just put private and not static, will it overload?
Well, I need to use both in order to be allowed to specify a public new version of the thing by the compiler, so that's why there's private static. But the static is in general not overloading. That's what I need in order to be able to call an M2 at that point somehow. And the private needs to be there in order to for the new name M2 to be introduced in the second class then. But I think, as this was, I think, already the third time that people didn't get that, I should switch back to a standard polymorphic example here. So thank you. Anyway, so that's what's supposed to no, not in the end. Yeah, and then there's the M3, and yeah, M3 is just introducing this super, which will lead for M1 to be interpreted on the static type not of B but of A. This would lead to M1A, and there's still no overwriting relation between these two versions because the types still mismatch, and thus we have M1A in A. Anyway, so we've seen that it's not as simple as we have originally thought how dispatching would actually work. So we should probably look a little bit deeper into the internal of the whole thing. However, as time has already once again neared the 3:45, I think it's not sufficient for doing that right now, so we'll skip that until next time. Anyway, I would wish you a nice day or week, depending on when we see another again, and goodbye.